Hey, this is Tyler from Subspace Transmissions. Just a note about the following episode. We actually had the chance to record this on location at Star Trek Las Vegas 2017. Wanted to point out that the audio quality is a little bit different than what our regular listeners are used to hearing, but it's all good. We had a lot of fun. Enjoy.
Transfer complete.
To Subspace Transmissions, the podcast for two Trek fans. Step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, taking good care of the tent in which he lives.
And we have two very special guests here in Las Vegas right now for our con wrap-up. I think they're pretty exhausted and weary from 5 days of Star Trek fun, but Scott Hardy...
What are you talking about? I'm wide awake right now.
And Tyler. James Chesser.
I'm very sleepy.
Yeah.
So I think what we're going to do is talk about our highlights of the con and kind of how the 5 days went. But I think before we get into that, Tyler, we should probably hit the timely points and talk about Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, we got to see a number of panels that were diving into it. We started off with, the writers came up first. And so we had Kristen Beyer as well as Akiva Goldsman. And I'm missing and Ted Sullivan, who's been really good on social media throughout all this. One of the questions, I was wondering is, can I be reassured by what the writers are pursuing here?
Were you?
I'll say this, though, I have full faith that what they are doing, they have full faith in.
Right.
They are invested in what they're doing. They love the franchise.
They have faith of the heart.
Yes. What was the name of the actual song that was used on Enterprise, though?
Oh, I knew you were going to put me on the spot.
You brought it on yourself, Cameron.
Never going to bend or break me. James, what is it?
It's Where My Heart Will Take Me.
Thank you.
That's actually a bit of a good trivia right there. It's not actually Faith of the Heart. That's the original Diane Warren composition written for one Rod Stewart. But I digress. I'm pleased to, with some of the answers that the writers gave. I just found... Did they give anything insightful or super cutting? I don't know. It's just a lot of generic answers, kind of the stuff that you'd expect. If I was writing a news story on this, I don't know what the headline would be.
I think they definitely wanted to, but the sniper marks on their foreheads prevented them from talking.
Yes.
What did you think of the writers from Discovery?
I didn't think they would go there and reveal anything. San Diego Comic-Con was their main thing to reveal everything. I just thought this was more of a reassurance act by CBS to the fans that they even know what canon is, at least. I think that's really what that was about.
Yep.
Akiva Goldsman scares the crap out of me because his filmography is much of it a nightmare.
It is, but yeah. What did you think of him on the panel?
I'll say this. He may be a really bad writer, but he's good in the room.
Yeah.
I think we know how he keeps working.
Okay.
Because, man, he had me kind of won over by the end.
I know.
Akiva Goldsman, I trust you.
I'm not a huge Akiva Goldsman fan, but, I could tell he's a big fan of the franchise. He's invested in this. The other thing that came out of this is, him, you and I have gone back and forth. We're wondering, Akiva Goldsman, what his involvement is going to be, the degree in which he's involved in the writer's room.
Yeah.
I think you and I both were probably just kind of a name on the credits. But he actually seems to be quite involved in the writer's room, much more so than I ever suspected.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a little scarier now. I don't know to the degree that he has influence on things. Because I know we have the two showrunners that are obviously guiding it creatively, but I'm kind of, I'm a little bit more reassured than I was maybe a week ago. Would you feel the same way, or are you less assured?
Yes, reassured. I still don't know what this show is, but the writers at least seem passionate about it, I question, how passionate Brendan Braga would have been on a panel before Enterprise came out. We've done two of these, and here I go for shot number three. I don't know that he would have been as passionate and wound up as these three were.
He's not the salesman that maybe Akiva Goldsman is.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to throw you on the spot, James. What is Star Trek Discovery about?
Space. Final Frontier.
Yeah. Do you have a pitch that you can give us, Scott? Because Cam and I, we've gone back and forth. We don't know what Star Trek Discovery is really about.
I don't think I could sum it up for you, but I will throw the question back at you. Can you sum up The Next Generation to me?
Yeah, I would say that it's the next generation of the Enterprise, seeking out new life, new civilizations, that sort of stuff there. With Discovery, I don't know, okay, I know what the hook is of Enterprise. Mm-hmm. It's the first ship. I know the hook of Voyager. It's a ship flung to the other side of the galaxy without all the support of Starfleet. DS9, it takes place on the space station.
Right.
Next generation, like I just said, I don't know what the hook is of Star Trek Discovery. And that's a big marketing problem that I think that they're facing right now. I don't know how they're marketing to fans, and I don't know how they're marketing to the general public either. It's really weird marketing.
Well, and we know there's two ships, the Shenzhou and the Discovery. They aren't even hyping two ships for the first time ever. We're going to track two ships, which leads me to believe that there aren't going to be two ships on the show. But, the, you know, like, they could hype that. Okay. It's something. It's so different.
I do forget, like, there was one panel I went to. I believe it was Ben Robinson at the Eagle Moss. If you guys are big fans of those beautiful, beautiful models that they produce, he, of course, is letting it be known that about the first quarter of next year, they're going to be releasing, like, Star Trek Discovery ships.
Yeah.
And he was saying, well, look, what we do know is that there's a war going on, which means a lot of ships. So I don't think it's just going to be this Shenzhou. For Shenzhou, did you notice, like, some of the actors were...
I didn't catch it, I know.
My Mandarin is not excellent, although I do know that...
Mine is, so I'm actually surprised I missed that.
Yeah. Do you know the funny thing is, though, that... Do you know what Shenzhou means?
No.
Spaceship. So, I don't know... I know it's a bit of a nod towards, like, the Chinese space program, but...
Is that kind of a, like, insulting nod?
I the thing is, like, all the Chinese spacecraft that go up, they're called, you know, Shenzhou 1, Shenzhou 2.
Okay, I did not.
But it literally means Spaceship 1, Spaceship 2.
Okay.
So, there you go.
Well,
what do you think of that, James?
Well, see, going by what you were saying about the Star Trek Discovery, that they're not focused on certain points, the thing is, they're talking to a Star Trek crowd. This show has Star Trek in the title.
Yeah.
They could show you nothing and just say we're showing it next week, first full episode. Everybody in that auditorium would have watched it.
And we would have all been seals clapping.
Yeah. I agree with you, but all these teasers and trailers which are being shown to people far beyond the fan base are, I'm sure, just as baffling to them.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I will just say, which is sort of a... Basically, I showed this trailer to my partner, Hannah.
Yeah.
And I said... Tell me about the show. I've listened to this podcast with you guys saying I don't really understand the premise. And I said, what's the premise? And she goes, oh, it's about space. And things blowing up. And I thought, okay.
Yeah.
That's all she took from it. And it's about Michael Burnham. She said it's her show.
Oh, yeah. Which I'm actually delighted by. Like, the more I look into what Sneaker Martin Green is doing in the marketing, I'm excited to explore her as a character. Like, that's if she's kind of the hook, I like that. I'm already digging Saru, played by Doug Jones. And, like, I think, I don't know, we'll see how it goes, but I kind of wish Michelle Yeoh was the captain of Discovery, but I don't know what the dynamics are going to be, but I think Michelle Yeoh is, like, the captain would be, like, she's going to be pretty awesome, I think.
Right. No, I agree. So, why don't we talk about the actors now?
Yes, okay. Cameron, should we let it be known that you had a wonderful encounter with a bunch of the actors that appeared on the panel?
Yeah, so four actors showed up, two of them Klingon actors, Mary Chiefo and Kenneth Mitchell. And then we had the crew member, Connor, played by Sam Bartholomew. It's a tough to pronounce name. And then also Wilson Cruz, who's the doctor aboard Tyler Wish ship, Discovery?
Yes, he is the chief medical officer on the Discovery, not the Shenzhou. That's actually another actor, Malik Haloshi? From 30 Rock.
Okay, so Wilson Cruz's character has a relationship with Stamets, played by Anthony Rapp on the show.
And what's amazing, though, is what a big fan Wilson Cruz is of the franchise, right, Cam?
He seems to be very passionate about being a member of this crew.
He's very familiar with all the actors from, say, Star Trek The Next Generation.
Definitely.
Like one Jonathan Frakes, as he referred to him.
Well,
that got a bit of a laugh going on amongst our group.
I mean, the actors were all, again, really passionate about what they were doing. You know, the two Klingon actors are talking about how they desperately want to actually learn the Klingon language, which I don't think actors wanted to do when they were on, like, Deep Space Nine. I don't think, like, J.T. Hertzler and Robert O'Reilly were like, I got to go home and I want to learn this language, you know, beat for beat.
I don't know. I could picture J.G. Hertzler doing that.
I don't think so. He's got things to do.
Okay. What did you make of the actors, Scott? I mean, did they show a lot of passion that you hope that actors have for this?
They definitely took to the stage and didn't really hold back. The one thing I will say about the Doctor's... what was the Doctor's name again? Can you remind me?
Wilson Cruz, Dr. Hugh Culber.
He made that mistake about Jonathan Frakes, and I think one other quick little mistake, but he was quick to shush the crowd down and really get them back on side, and by the end they were all applauding him, so I...
Yeah, I think when the actors first came out, I think maybe the fans is more kind of like the reluctant, polite, like clapping.
And to be fair, no one in that crowd knows who these people really are.
Exactly.
They weren't marching out Sinequa Martin Green and Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
This was four actors who none of us sitting here really know how much they're going to play into the overall series.
Well, none of them are regulars.
Right. Which, do we have the next Garrick on that panel? I don't know. Maybe.
I don't think we do.
Yeah, that's the thing. We just don't know who we even got.
But they all seemed delightful.
Yes, they did. Yeah. The big, I guess, bombshell that came out of the panel was Kenneth Mitchell dropped a photo of his character, Kahl, and revealed that Kahl is from the House of Kor.
Right.
And Kor was played by John Colicos in the episode Errand of Mercy in the original series. So that was pretty exciting, at least for me, like an original series geek, to find out. That actually, I have complained, as anyone who listens to this podcast will know, I have complained about these new Klingon designs and whatever.
Yeah.
But I walked away having a lot more respect for at least the show really, really is interested in the Klingons. In a way that it's not just cosmetic. It's not just, here, throw some silly makeup, some silly new makeup on them, and just throw them out there as cannon fodder, like, say, Star Trek Into Darkness did.
Right. I will say this, I was a little bit skeptical of Kenneth as playing Cole, because the original actor, I'm guessing Middle Eastern descent, and I thought that would be, a cool look for the Klingons. I think they like the actor so much that they cast him in more of a regular role as a human officer aboard one of the ships. I think his name is Ash Tyler.
Yeah.
I love the name of that character, by the way. Anyways.
I'm still waiting for a Cam character.
I saw Kenneth Mitchell on stage. He's actually laying down some of his dialogue as Cole. And he even actually, when we saw the photo go up, all of a sudden the character came to life for me. And I was like, this guy, I think, gets it. And no matter what you think of the Klingon design, I think this guy gets what it means to be a Klingon, and I'm super excited to see him. What did you think of the actress playing Laurel? Because, she was super enthusiastic about that.
Mary Chiappo, she's a Shakespearean, a student of Shakespeare, basically, and she was talking just
Laurel. Isn't that what it says on your Tinder profile? A student of Shakespeare?
Well, I kind of was.
Yeah.
But, she's just, in the most florid of, language, talking about her passion for, the Klingon language and how, she was really interested to learn it perfectly, because she's done Shakespeare for so many years. I mean, the amount of enthusiasm this actress had for this role, I don't know how big a role it is, but nonetheless, I was genuinely wowed by her commitment to this character.
Yeah.
And, she very much stands out in the crowd. Believe me, she was the one I spotted first when I ran into the group of actors in the vendor hall.
But I have to admit, out of all the actors that we saw up on stage, I kind of hope she's the one who's sticking around for the longest period. I just think she seems so distinct, and she seems so enthusiastic about it, but I think it's going to be fun with, as we get more of the regulars coming to these conventions. James, I want to throw it out to you, though, because I think out of the four of us here, you're perhaps with the more casual Star Trek fan. Is that accurate?
That is very fair.
What did you get from the actors here? Did their excitement excite you?
I wasn't there, Kyle.
That's right. I forgot about that. I apologize.
No worries. But
I'm here to humiliate you.
That's okay, but I've been hearing good things. Hesitant optimism, I think, is what everybody has, and coming from this panel, I've not heard anybody change their opinion of that. They're quietly optimistic.
I think everyone in that room wants to like Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
But I think they're very nervous about it. And I don't know that these panels, because there was another one on the creature effects in the first Star Trek Discovery, where they talked about a lot of the design sense. And, they didn't have... You see, the problem is, with all of these panels, we have no context for what they're talking about. So they're talking in vague overview of a show that none of us really know what it is. And, when they're talking about the design of creatures, for example, they're really only talking about Saru, played by Doug Jones, and the Klingon.
And that's it. Wouldn't you be far more excited to get hints of what's to come, even if it's, like, aliens that we're not familiar with?
Sure.
You know, they don't have to, like, drop bombs like, oh, yeah, we're going to feature the Tellarites or the Andorians. Like, I get it, but, like, I would like to at least know some of these new lifeforms.
Well, you know, whenever they're saying a new Star Wars movie, you know, they'll reveal a new alien, but it's an alien that's kind of maybe a side character, a background character, you know, in a scene. Like, they couldn't even do that. Like, march out... Here's an alien, episode 3, you know, kind of a side, has like one line.
Or like Obi-Wan's friend who works at the diner.
Sure. The four-armed diner chef. Yeah. You know, like they could have marched something like that over.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be big.
Why don't we segue very quickly over to the design panel. We got some designers come in. Was it Neville Chamberlain? That was former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom.
That was the surprise drop-in.
Yeah, right to Neville Chamberlain.
Neville Chapman? I'm blanking on his name here.
I am too.
Listeners, I just looked it up in our program. It was Neville Page and Glenn Hetrick, the designers that joined us. I thought that was a fantastic
panel. Yeah.
And but I know kind of the disappointment there with them not revealing much more than the Klingons and Saru, the Kelpian.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, Kim, the biggest cheer that we heard all afternoon, though, was during the design panel when they were showing how they want to have all these motifs on probably the most intricate designs of any sort of costumes or armor we've ever seen in Star Trek before. And there's an amazing kind of image that we saw with, like, this Klingon warrior laying, his arms spread across, he's upside down. They're calling it, like, we interpret it as a warrior submitting to battle. And when you look at his body and then his arms spread out, you realize it's the shape of the Klingon symbol that we all know, that kind of triangular thing.
Yeah.
And the crowd went absolutely wild. Like,
that may have been the biggest, like, wow moment of the entire weekend.
So I think we're talking about, like, are these hardcore Trek fans who've been kind of reluctant to accept Discovery? I know there's all these people that don't want to believe it's canon or whatever. I think a lot of them may have been won over by this, and I think it's brilliant on CBS's part, you know, getting them out there. I wonder if CBS maybe wishes they had done even more to kind of solidify that, because, I love the design panel out of all three of them. I think that was probably my favorite one because it was most insightful out of everything.
Right. Okay. No, I agree very much. So why don't we move into the 30th anniversary of TNG. This is the other huge event.
Now, this is what brought James Chester out from Scotland. he's a little on the fence about coming out to this, but he heard it's the 30th anniversary of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, and that's my Star Trek, so it's like, oh, Patrick Stewart's going to be... Well, I suppose if he's coming, I mean, it'd be...
Were you guys on the same flight over here?
I didn't see him.
No? Okay.
No.
You were voting for squad, right?
Yeah, well, that's the only way to travel, Cam, so, TNG's always been my series, the series I grew up with. I was born in 1987. This is my 30th anniversary as well, thanks. You didn't send me a card, Tyler, but that's fine.
You guys know for a fact I don't send cards. It's on our Christmas card thread in our WhatsApp group.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I love TNG. I love the... It's just my Star Trek. You know what I mean when I say it's my Star Trek? Everybody has their Star Trek.
So right. What year were you born?
Also 1987.
So does Star Trek The Next Generation have a soft spot in your heart? I know for a fact, for listeners that may not remember Scott's last appearance, when we talk about it, Deep Space Nine is your favorite series, but what do you feel about Next Gen?
I mean, Next Generation was the show that I was brought into the world with. I was born on the 30th of August. It debuted the following month, about 2 weeks later, on BBC television in the UK.
What did you think of it at the time?
I mean, at the time, I was captivated by it. I couldn't look away.
You're drooling all over
yourself.
Is the cure for your colic.
Boobs, poop, sleep, Star Trek Next Generation. Yeah.
I wish I could live that life.
He was very excited for the episode of The Child, because he could relate to it.
But obviously, I think all four of us, if Next Gen is not our number one, it's maybe our second pick for favorite series.
My third.
That's right.
It is, yeah.
But I think we all really love, there's no reluctance to say, there's no qualifiers here to say Next Gen is great.
Not at all.
So what did you guys think of the 30th celebration of it? Like, they had actors thrown throughout the weekends. We had Well, I guess there weren't really any exhibits dedicated to Next Gen.
Not really. Yeah, there was. There was. There was the, and it's something I'll touch on later, but the Roddenberry exhibit next to the Discovery exhibit, which we'll touch on.
Oh, yeah, you're right, right.
Yeah. Which had a lot of the costumes and props from Next Generation, including, I think, Dr. Crusher's uniform was in there.
I saw that, yeah.
Stephen Cochran from the movie, a couple of models that they used for shots as well.
Yeah, I modeled for Star Trek the Next Generation.
Mm-hmm. You were a borrowed cube, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was panels, there was a lot of them, mm-hmm. because you had all of the actors doing their kind of regular panels you would see at any other con. Patrick Stewart showed up in 3 different panels.
Yeah.
There was a lot, you know.
That's the most I've ever seen Patrick Stewart mm-hmm. at any of these conventions.
Yeah, by the third one, you're like, okay, enough with this guy, move on. But, you know, he did a panel dedicated to the Inner Light. An episode that is, you know, often considered the finest TNG ever produced, at least in the eyes of many. You know, just going around, guys, like, what were some of your favorite moments with TNG actors?
Well, you know, let's just get it out of the way. For anyone who wasn't there, Next Generation had, like, a special panel in the evening. Scott and James, you guys were enjoying the Beatles show here in Las Vegas at the time.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But Cam and I, we got to witness kind of an awkward encounter between Gates McFadden and Marina Sirtis.
Right.
They disagreed about, you know, whether actors nowadays, young actors, are seeking out fame or if they really do have a passion for acting. Gates McFadden, let's be honest, she works with a lot of young people. She's an acting coach, an instructor. I think she has maybe her ear to the ground a little bit more, but she did disagree with Marina Sirtis' assertion about how all the young people in America are seeking fame, whereas those in England are actually seeking out acting opportunities. And I think Gates McFadden made maybe not the best choice of words, where she said that America is, like, way bigger than England.
Yeah.
And so I see where they're both coming from. I think it would not have been an awkward encounter at all if simply Marina Sirtis had let Gates McFadden articulate what she wanted to say right out of the gates.
Right.
But, I mean, other than
out
that...
Out of the gates,
yes. I was sitting there eating popcorn the whole time, because you can tell these are friends who have had, you know, arguments before, disagreements. Whatever happened on stage, they didn't even care by the time, like, they were out grabbing steak dinners with each other, like, a few moments later, right?
It was a little tense, though.
It was a little tense, but, like, I loved it.
Yeah.
I don't think those two, it had any impact on their friendship at all. And you can tell they've had debates like this in the past. So, like, I know everybody on social media was talking all about how scandalous it was, but, I mean, I just thought it was entertaining.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that whole panel, which, you know, unfortunately Jonathan Frakes couldn't make it, because he, I guess, couldn't get a flight to the conference.
It was a real Frakes with the weather.
But, you know, it was the rest of the cast, plus John Delancey.
And Denise Crosby.
Yep. And it was a lot of fun. You know, they told lots of stories about back in the day shooting the show. I thought John Delancey was, like, the secret weapon. John Delancey fascinates me, because he's very, like, he's not a guy who's going to talk in a crowd. You know, he tends to be very quiet on those panels, but when he talks, he's either the funniest person of the panel, or he says something that sounds incredibly wise.
I'll say this, Kim, you and I were talking about John Delancey's response to some of the fans. I forget if it was during the TNG panel. He didn't talk so much during the TNG panel. I think he knew, like, people were there more for, like, the Patrick Stewarts or...
Well, you could tell from the applause when each one came out.
Yes. but maybe earlier in the day, you know, somebody asked him, you know, about the relationship between, like, Trelane and Q, and whether he had talked to William Campbell at all about the connection. And John Delancey's like, yeah, I talk to William Campbell every day. It's like... And I loved it because, like, I think the key here is, like, John Delancey, every convention I see him at, he treats everybody as if they're adults. As if you would treat, you know, any person you would encounter in your day-to-day life. And I'm just being honest here. I think sometimes some of the actors kind of treat certain fans a little bit like children.
Right.
You know, where maybe they are giving them a little bit too much credit. So I appreciate John Delancey's treating people like adults. John Delancey, I asked him a question I thought that was insightful a couple years ago back in Seattle, and he's kind of dismissive of it, and
right.
I could appreciate that. I was asking him about his role on Breaking Bad back in season 2, and just how does he get in the mindset of playing such a kind of a conflicted guy who's going through some trauma, and he's just like, he literally like kind of tossed his like hand at me is just like, yeah, it's just acting, you know, like, what are you talking about? It's just like, fair enough, you're being honest here. I like that. What about you, Cam?
I thought he brought a lot to his panel. Guys, what did you think, you know, of the John Delancey appearance?
I mean, the one thing that springs to mind, obviously we didn't see the big one.
Panel,
but we did see him step in, take over from, I think, Jonathan Frakes.
No, it was going to be him and LeVar Burton were one panel, but LeVar switched.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So we weren't initially going to be scheduled with a solo John Delancey panel, but we wound up with one because of Frakes.
He ended up making a bit of an analogy that I looked over to James afterwards and gave a little nod of approval, where I think he was speaking about why he still comes to conventions and why he enjoys doing it, and he compared it to talking about a meal that he had years ago that became really famous, and now he just spends his time answering questions about, you know, the ingredients and how he made it. And
how he what was going on when he went to the store to buy the ingredients.
I thought that was quite a nice analogy for it. And he wasn't, as you say, talking down to anyone. He was just saying he enjoys doing it, and he will keep doing it, which is nice.
For sure. Now, what were some of your other impressions from the other, you know, we got several panels with other TNG stars. Did any jump out at you? Any in particular?
I love Marina Sirtis. She is wonderful chaos, is the way I would describe her. And having the stoic Michael Dorn, I feel like she brings out more out of Michael Dorn than Michael Dorn would like.
I met Michael Dorn. I brought nothing out of him.
Yeah, talk about awkward encounters. Cam, I was there with you when he met Michael Dorn a couple years ago in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Oh, that was awkward. It was pretty brutal.
I love the energy that she has. There's two types of not caring. There's not caring because you don't want to be there, and there's not caring because you don't care what other people's opinions are.
Right.
And Marina Sirtis falls into the latter, which is the more entertaining and just has more energy. When someone has more energy, you have more energy. It's infectious.
She made, I think, a really good point here. Like, a lot of the actors say, like, there's a lot of them in the characters that they're famous for playing, and Marina Sirtis is like, no, like, not with Troy, she's nothing like me. And she's like, except for in First Contact when I was drunk.
Right.
That's the real Marina Sirtis.
She kind of dropped a bombshell, too, that when it came to Nemesis, and they were negotiating her contract.
But wait, Cam, like, she says that she has never told this story before at any convention. So it's a bit of a scoop/exclusive.
Yeah, and, you know, it kind of came up because they were talking about the disparity between men and women actors when it came to contract negotiations. And she said hers was hell. And when she was dealing with the Nemesis negotiation, they threatened to basically replace her with Jeri Ryan.
Yes.
And then she, of course, joked that, you think Jeri Ryan's going to show up for this amount of money?
Yeah. Well, what do you think, though? I mean, if that was going to be the case, do you think, you know, her best buds, the six other cast members, would have come around and be like, Paramount, seriously, don't be cheapskates. Like,
I don't know. I've always wondered about that. Yeah. Because
that's kind of like the Friends negotiation contract model.
Yeah, right. Yeah, of course. Friends cast really stuck together. I know there's been other casts that have done that as well. But it does seem like the TNG people, maybe that wasn't so much the case.
Yeah.
I kind of get that sense, because she's like, well, it was easy for the guys. The women are fighting.
Yeah.
It's not like the guys were, it seems, fighting for Gates McFadden and Marina Sirtis. I mean, I don't want to say that they weren't. Maybe Patrick Stewart was going to Rick Berman about these things. But it didn't seem like it was kind of the one for all, you know, all for one for all that, say, the Friends cast was.
Sure. But she was really championing people like Jennifer Lawrence, that's calling Hollywood out on
a
big disparity between what males and female leads are getting per payment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Guys, anything else we want to cover on the TNG panels that really jumped out to you?
Well, I mean, I just wanted to say sort of a thank you to Creation, really, for putting this all together. It's a big year for the Next Generation, and they put a lot of effort into putting these different panels, not just the main cast, but, you know, secondary actors and behind-the-scenes panels and things like that. Just for this, you know, 30th anniversary isn't exactly a big thing, but they made it a big thing. We've got Patrick Stewart. Great.
One last thing that kind of bridges the gap between TNG and Discovery. Brent Spiner revealed this. Like, he actually had a meeting with Brian Fuller.
Right.
And this one, Brian Fuller is still attached to Discovery. Brian Fuller actually asked Brent Spiner if he'd be interested in reprising the role of Data at maybe one point during the run of Discovery. Brent Spiner was like, have you looked at me lately? Brian Fuller assured him, like, look, digital effects guys, we have them on staff, we can get it done, you'll look exactly like you did back in 1987.
Let's just do kind of a round table here. Who would like to see young Data again?
I don't think it makes any sense in the context of Star Trek Discovery, though. I don't know how that would work. You know, like, because at this point, Dr. Soong is, what, like, a baby?
Yeah.
He's like Scott when Scott was watching Encounter at Hardpoints.
Right.
You know? I don't, look, maybe it could work, but I hate if it's like some weird time travel thing. We've done that. Do we need another Soong ancestor? We already did that in Enterprise. I kind of like them going to new things, meeting new people. I'm not so for it. Michael Dorn said at a previous convention he was offered a chance to appear in the premiere episode of Star Trek Discovery. He said that the payment that they were offering was, like, embarrassingly cheap.
Yeah.
So it was, like, I don't know, like $500 or something like that. So he said no. I'm happy to move on. What about you, Scott?
I don't know what purpose it would serve for the character of Data. Even though people won't agree with how his character was sort of closed off in Nemesis, we don't need to do anything else with him. What purpose does it serve for Brent Spiner's character that he spent, what, 12, 13 years crafting?
Yeah.
I think it doesn't inform.
Yeah, and when it comes to fan service, less is more. So you don't want to have another Star Trek Into Darkness scenario where it's not a bad movie, it's just the weakest of the three. Make Star Trek Discovery your own.
Yeah.
We don't need that spider, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, the baton tosses at the sort of the start of the series are fine, but I don't really see how Data ties into that. Unless you're, like, ripping off the 2009 J.J. Abrams, with like, oh, Data's here from the future.
He's a new Spock?
Yeah, he's, like, on an ice planet somewhere.
Okay. So who's young Spock?
Well,
is it still going to be Brent Spiner?
You mean young Data?
Sorry, yeah. But like, the equivalent of young Spock in this situation. Like, are they going to recast him, or are they going to use those digital effects?
Well, I think you have to use Michael Burnham, right? Because that's how he kind of shows up and passes the baton.
Okay.
He's like, have fun!
No, but remember, there's, like, Leonard Nimoy and Zach Quinto.
Yeah.
So, like, who's the Zach Quinto, who's the Leonard Nimoy in this situation?
Like, who can we see playing a young Brent Spiner?
Yeah. Cam, you and I, we actually discussed
this. I don't know, like a battery pack?
Well, you and I discussed this on the show maybe, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And I think we decided the best thing, if there's ever going to be a TNG revival, is, like, hire mannequins and the
original, have them on strings.
And have them on strings, and the original actors will do the voices.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
We
didn't really take CG into account.
Guys, do you remember, I think it was last year Scott Bakula was on stage, and he said as well that he had a meeting with Brian Fuller, and he was given big, big hints that maybe one John Archer would be making an appearance on the show as well.
Right.
I think that actually makes more sense when it comes to baton tossing, and I would have to imagine it's more like that Zefram Cochrane, kind of like, hey, here's a video clip, because...
Right.
How old do you think John Archer is going to be by this era? About 150 or so?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think they're, as a fan, I want to see some sort of baton tossing, but I don't want it. I want it to be more in the vein of Picard and Sisko in Emissary, not so much, you know, McCoy and Data in Encounter at Hardpoint.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. So, why don't we kind of move on and just talk about some of our highlights, some of the panels that, you know, really made this weekend special. Scott, why don't we start with you? What was one of your highlights?
Well, sort of expanding on what we were talking about before, they also brought along, CBS brought along, I should say, a exhibit for the Discovery props and costumes, and which mostly have been seen at the San Diego Comic-Con. They brought that along as well, and that was really great. They brought the captain's chair along. You can have a little photo with it, and you can get right up close with the costumes and the props that they've already designed. And, you know, this is unheard of for a show that hasn't even been on the air yet, really. You can really see the detail in it and the love they've put into creating it.
Yeah, they didn't do this for CSI New York, for example, before its premiere.
No, or NCIS New Orleans when Scott Bakula signed on.
That's true. Yeah.
No, yeah, I agree very much. Like, those photo ops were a lot of fun. And that Klingon torchbearer armor up close was incredible.
Wow, yeah.
I have no idea if that is going to have any major role in the series. I feel like it's going to be one shot, like banging a gong or something like that.
Yeah.
But seeing it up close was really, really cool.
But shows you, like, kind of the love and care that the designers are putting into the series. What did you guys think about, like, the new look of the Batleth here?
I thought it was pretty cool.
Okay, it seemed more like a harpoon versus like a blade. You
right.
Know? Like, it's more of a stabbing weapon versus like a cutting weapon. So I was a little like, huh.
Yeah.
Oh, but we also got to sit in like kind of the captain's chair.
Yep.
And we all got photos sent to each other in our emails. Cam, maybe I'll give you a little bit more work if you're taking care of the blog this week. Maybe we can post some highlights of some great photo clips or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, I'm sure we can.
Okay, but like, see you and me looking like badasses in that captain's chair.
Right.
And guys, you have not lived until you've seen Scott in the captain's chair.
Oh, I agree.
That's what I was born to do, I mean.
What I really liked about this exhibit, too, and what Creation was doing, was folding Discovery into the con, you know, into the Star Trek con, giving it, making it feel like it belongs within this convention. Because that is something the J.J. Abrams movies have not done well.
I know, that is kind of weird, guys.
Like, they bombed it badly.
What do you think,
James? When
you look at all the banners, it's always one side says 30th Anniversary, Next Generation, the other side says Star Trek Discovery. It's all on the backdrop, banners, everywhere. So, they're making a full force go-ahead with it. And you can tell, I mean, seeing the exhibit, those quality of costumes, I mean, it's the first true HD shot TV series. You can see the money's gone into it. They have a lot of faith in this, and just the quality of everything is just a level up from what we've seen.
I don't want to correct you, but I believe starting in season 2 or 3 of Star Trek Enterprise, they did start to film it in HD.
Oh. Well, I would say the difference is this is a show designed for HD.
Yes.
Whereas Enterprise was not.
True.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, Scott, what do you make of kind of the love that they're putting into Discovery here?
I mean, just sort of furthering on from what you were mentioning before, Tyler, I think it was kind of
how badass you look in the captain's chair. I just want to bring it up, then.
I've seen these photos,
photos plural, as I had to go back and retake because I wasn't happy with the first one.
But so vain of you, Scott.
What can I say? no, it's more of a case of, I feel like it's ripping off a Band-Aid in a sense, that they're easing it off by showing the hardcore fans that, you know, travel the world to Las Vegas to see Star Trek. By exposing us to the show this early on, helps to sort of, I don't know, nullify the effects of the people that don't really want this show.
Right.
I can't really articulate it very well, but I mean, I hope you get the point I'm making here.
No, I agree. But it doesn't feel like, you know, I was going to these cons when Star Trek Into Darkness was released. It didn't feel like they were bending over backwards to hype that movie that much. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like they're invested in Discovery in a way that I feel like the J.J. Abrams did not care about the conventions, and I don't think the conventions cared that much about them.
Or did we even get, like, one of the notable actors last year for the convention?
No.
I think Carl Urban canceled.
Yeah, he canceled.
Yeah. And he was here this year.
He was here this year, and he comes a lot, or as much as he can.
He likes this.
Yes, he likes it. It's not like anyone beyond Carl Urban, who seems down for it just in general, was being signed up by Paramount by Paramount.
Because didn't John Cho come to one, but only one?
Before I started going, I think it was like 2011 or 2010 or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of surprised. Don't you think some of those actors, even some of like the lower tier actors, would be more interested in hitting these up?
Yeah.
I just wonder what the relationship is like between Creation Entertainment, which puts on these conventions. I think they have a much closer relationship with CBS, which is in charge of TV, versus Paramount, which is in charge of film.
Very much so.
Yeah.
So, James, what was one of your highlights?
Despite what I said 3 years ago on the podcast, this Shatner panel was a definite
highlight. Yeah. That's on my highlights, too.
Yeah.
But, Cam, you and I, we've noticed that we've been to Shatner multiple times. He has good days and he has bad days.
Yeah.
And I would say that this is among the best I've ever seen Shatner.
Absolutely, and part of that will always attribute to Scott Mantz. He was hosting this particular panel, and the man has energy. He asks questions. He knows what questions get asked a lot, and what questions have been answered numerous times. So he always tries to throw those in at the beginning. And my personal little highlight of that was William Shatner literally was trying to talk about riding a camel for the first time, and he said, "Who's that guy? You know that guy?" And Scott Mantz went, "Peter O'Toole?" And he went, "Yes!" And then he just got Mantz's hand. That's just a personal highlight for me. It just feels that he was playful more than everything, I would say.
Yeah, if you guys do recall at the top of the episode, I mentioned that I was trying to keep my tent clean. Shatner, probably not repeatable on this podcast, but he did try to tell some sort of joke about desert people keeping their tents clean and horses getting in the way of that. It was a real awkward moment.
Oh, it was pretty amazing.
It was pretty amazing, but, like, not politically correct.
Not at all. You know, Shatner, to me, one of the joys for me at this point is just, like, he's not scared to ruffle feathers.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care, and it's kind of like Marina Sirtis. Like, he's going to just drop bombs out there.
Yeah.
Not in a tent. but, you know, that he doesn't care if you find it offensive or not. And, you know, I think the key is that Shatner, I don't think he wants to offend anyone. He's just trying to entertain. It's an old, I mean, he's 80-something years old, right? You know, so you're going to get a different approach to politically correct humor than a younger star will ever give.
Yeah.
But I think what matters is the substance. And I felt like past years, and I think you guys would probably agree, Shatner often felt like he was spinning his wheels. He's talking about pixels or something, like something bizarre where you're like, what is he talking about? There was that one, was it last year, he talked about like time inside time or something?
Yeah. He's a guy walking down the street who's in the middle of a conversation and just goes, oh, look, there's a dog.
Yeah.
Oh, focus, William, focus.
It was anti-time. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the phrase.
Scott, what did you think of Shatner's panelists here?
I mean, it was certainly a highlight. There were a couple of moments that won't make the podcast, I imagine, that I quite enjoyed. But in terms of the content, I mean, I think a lot of credit goes to Scott Mantz.
Yeah.
I think James spoke about him last year on the podcast and is clearly a massive fan.
What a guy.
What a guy. He controlled it.
Yeah, he's a good moderator, yeah. For sure.
I really like Scott Mantz as a moderator.
And I like that he would, because we know Shatner doesn't really like to talk about Star Trek that much.
Yeah.
What I appreciated was that Scott Mantz kind of found in, you know, kind of backdoor ways to kind of work Star Trek into the questions.
Yeah.
So, and maybe ask a question that, you know, got Shatner talking about the acting approach to Star Trek and things like that without saying, you know, in episode 15, you said this. You know what I mean? Because
no, he was even saying, like, I'm not going to tell you episode titles. I'm just going to describe what happened in this one.
Right.
And I think that was genius on Scott Mantz.
Yeah. And, I mean, there was a moment, actually, where Shatner was asked about, you know, which of the women on the series he would want to have a relationship with. And he, you know, as politically incorrect as Shatner could be, he shut that question down.
I did appreciate that a lot.
But he wasn't a total jerk. You know, he said, that's a silly or stupid question.
He said, that's a stupid question.
Well, he said silly the first time, and then he came back and said, you know what, that's a stupid question.
Why don't you ask a real question?
Well, he let the question asker ask another question.
And then the guy who asked the question actually had a much better question, which he was asking Shatner about his performances. Like, what would he consider to be his best performance? I don't think Shatner was a big fan of that one either.
But he was gracious about it. Yeah. You know, when he answered, he said, thank you for the question. Like, he, you know, I've seen Shatner be a real dick to people on stage. Mm-hmm. And he seemed like he was maybe in just a better mood this year.
Yeah.
But also more focused in what he was there for. You know, he was obviously marketing some of the stuff he's got coming out, you know, the 5 books he wrote last year.
How does he have time for all this, Cam?
I have no idea.
Wow.
He's shooting a TV series. He's writing 5 books a year. He's got movies going on. It's amazing. Speaking tours. You know, that man is a symbol.
He's a workhorse.
Yeah, no kidding. We should all aspire to that.
Yeah, he's a workhorse that doesn't poop in the tent.
That's correct. Yeah. But, you know, let's move on. Cause, yeah, Shatner's there every year, but this was a great year for Shatner. One of my favorites ever.
I think this is maybe my favorite Shatner appearance so far.
Okay, so why don't I move on? I want to talk about one I don't think any of you were there for, which was Dr. Mae Jemison.
No.
Who was the first African-American astronaut, a female astronaut in space. This was a panel that Creation kind of held off on announcing their 100th guest for a long time. So much as they announced guests number 101, 102, 103, 104.
Without announcing guest number 100.
Yeah, and said, but don't worry, we'll get back to 100.
Yeah.
And then they announced Dr. Mae Jemison, and people were not over the moon. Like, not that that's a pun, of course. Not intentional. I'll take credit for it. But I think they were a little disappointed. I think the fact that Creation dragged out the 100th guest announcement so long, people were thinking, this is going to be Chris Pine, this is going to be Sonequa Martin-Green, this is going to be something big.
Just in all fairness, Mae Jemison, she did appear on an episode of Star Trek.
For sure.
Yeah, so she does have that connection. It's not just that she's an astronaut.
She does, but, you know, I went to her panel. I felt like I should cover it, because that was an important one to be there for. And
I think that's like a backhanded remark about Tyler, who was on a different panel.
I felt like someone had to be there.
Yeah.
So I went, and, you know, the room was not that full. It was sort of modest. I mean, it was on Wednesday, so it was kind of a slower day to start with.
Do you think that's their loss? Because I don't want to, like, scoop you, but you said this was actually, like, a really
panel really surprised me. Yeah. I thought Dr. Jemison was not just well-spoken, but very passionate and was just a great storyteller.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a space geek. Like, I'm just not that interested in NASA stuff. You know, and lots of people there were, but I'm not. But she managed to convey that, you know, those sort of stories in a way that I thought were really involving and interesting. Not only that, she was a hardcore, like, original series geek. And she was, like, having a ball trashing episodes like Turnabout Intruder.
One of my least favorite.
Right, where they announced that no woman could be a captain of a starship, you know. And she was just like, what bullshit was that,
this
you know?
Is why I don't mind Discovery retconning things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's, like, I don't... Like, that's the kind of continuity that just I hate.
Right. And, you know, her and Scott Maris were making fun of the episode Mud's Women. Like, there was, you know, it wasn't just a panel that felt like, let's focus on NASA. You know,
right,
like,
right.
Dr. Jameson wanted to talk about Star Trek stuff, too. So you kind of got the best of both worlds there. And I thought both halves were actually really entertaining. I really liked her a lot. And they brought out Nichelle Nichols, who I wasn't sure why they were kind of bringing out, but it turned out, like, her and Dr. Jameson had, like, a real relationship. And Nichelle Nichols talks a lot about...
Let me ask you this, though. Like,
yes.
We're talking about Shatner. He has good days. He has bad days.
Yeah.
We've seen that with Nichelle Nichols as
for
well.
Sure.
How was she on this panel with Dr. Jameson?
I think she was better than last year when she appeared, but Nichelle Nichols is not in optimal health at this point
yeah.
in life. But, I mean, I had never... Nichelle Nichols has talked a lot on panels about, you know, her trying to recruit women and minorities for NASA. And I was always a little unclear as to how the other side felt, because I believe,
right.
you know, Nichelle Nichols had put a lot of effort into doing this. But I never really knew what her relationship with was like with people in NASA. But Dr. Jameson just could not say enough about how inspirational Nichelle Nichols was to her, and the role that Nichelle Nichols played for so many of the, especially the female astronauts at NASA. And I thought that was just fascinating.
I am bummed that I had to miss it. I was in the second... I wasn't even in the secondary ballroom at the time. I was at the third-tier stage.
Right.
There's a lot of fun stuff going on the third-tier stage that's... I got to see Renee Bergeron. It was a very sparsely populated crowd, so I got to ask questions of him because not everybody was going to the mic. And then that was followed up by Iris Stephen Bear as well. Of course, we know as the executive producer of Star Trek, the Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
I said Star Trek, the Deep Space Nine. I don't know why I added that.
That's what I call it, the Deep Space Nine.
The Deep Space Nine, yeah.
You're being hip with the kids.
This is amazing. I've never experienced this before, but I ran up to the front row. I wanted to make sure I could get up to the mic as quick as I could, and I was actually kind of annoyed because Iris Stephen Bear, he looked at the stage, he's like, yeah, screw this. And he walked off stage, he's like, I'm buying everybody coffee. Let's just all stand around and talk to each other like we would in a normal conversation. He literally bought 50 cups of coffee, had everybody crowded around him, sipping drinks. There's about probably 5-6 people that got to ask him. I think a lot of people were just kind of in awe.
Right.
Like, big Deep Space Nine fans. I got to ask him, like 3 questions, you know, all about his experience with, I think, a lot of episodes that I think are even more applicable to nowadays. Cam, you and I went in depth on, say, Past Tense, Paradise Lost, and the Garrick 2-part episode in which it's not in Purgatory Shadow.
No.
It's in Probable Cause.
Yes.
That 2-parter there. I was asking him about, like, why are these so much more applicable nowadays? So I got to ask questions like that. It was just fascinating. Like, to me, this is a big highlight for me, just, like, talking to Iris Stephen Bear, who I respect so much, and, like, it's like having a normal conversation with someone as opposed to, like, having, like, feedback go through the mic.
Or a creation person holding the mic to your mouth.
Yes, and like, I can only see the person way up on stage in the very distance, you
right.
know, and so this, to me, was like, I was like, how am I going to talk this for, like, the rest of the weekend? But I to me, that was so cool to see. I've never experienced that at a convention where, like, literally the speaker gets off stage and just has a conversation with everybody there.
Right.
Yeah,
it was very cool. I think you were at that maybe the same time I was at Dr.
It is the Bergeron and the Iris Stephen Bear. They're going on simultaneously
yeah.
with the Dr. Nate Jemison one.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why I missed that one. But, look, I like kind of smaller conventions. Cam, you and I have discussed this in the past, but with the smaller conventions, you actually get more of a chance to kind of, like, engage with the actors there. So I think that's kind of a good thing.
Right.
I love these Las Vegas conventions, though. Like, these are awesome. But they're a whole different animal than what you get with if you go to, like, I don't know, Topeka, Kansas at a mini mall or something.
That's where I'm planning on going for my next convention experience.
Yeah.
Scott, what about you? What's your another one?
A bit of a strange one for me. So I think James would probably agree with me on this one. So this year we downgraded our tickets from Captain's Chair, which is a package just under the top tier, which is gold, down to General Admission, which saved us more than half of what the Captain's Chair price was, which I mean you can find online.
Yeah, they're expensive.
Mm-hmm. And I think the view wasn't bad at all. We were sat quite far away from the stage, but they were close to seats if we wanted them. And, you know, it didn't take anything away from it, and it certainly made it a lot more affordable for those of the fans out there that might want to come, but just can't get that price point of $500-$600 a ticket. You know, we paid $200 for our tickets, and that, didn't take anything away from our experience.
And it's worth noting, like, there's three different stages. Like, how much time do you guys spend in, say, the main ballroom versus, like, the secondary and the third-tier ballroom?
I mean, this year, for me, I think it's actually relatively the same. You go years back, and everything was good, really, was happening in the main theatre, and then you would maybe go to the secondary for the odd thing or two. Whereas I spent a lot of time in CBS All Action Stage, which is the third theatre, several panels, including your own, in the second, and then a few in the first, so I think it was really well spread.
And the more they add interactive experiences outside of the main stage, like the stage you mentioned, Todd, the CBS All Access, which is a third stage of things going on, it's really the main stage that's ruled by these price tiering.
Yeah.
So I wonder at a certain point if they're going to have to figure out ways to kind of adjust to justify charging more for, you know, certain packages. Because when you're offering so many experiences to the lower price that are across the board, you include for everyone.
But, like, they've already lost, like, James's and Scott's business.
Yeah, and another of our friends is planning to step down, too. So, you know, I am curious what that holds for the future of Las Vegas.
We noticed once that we bought our general admission tickets, maybe a day or so afterwards, they shot up by $100 as well, just for general admission. So they must have seen that that's where the money's going to be this year.
Yeah. Okay, James, what's another highlight from you?
McFarlane Toys did a couple of presentations, one on the secondary stage and one on the CBS Action stage, and I loved it. I used to be a big toy collector with action figures. I'm a wrestling fan, so there's a lot of wrestling figures out there.
What's your favorite wrestling figure that you collected? What was the most cherished one as a child? I'm putting you on the spot, James. I need, like, just what comes to mind right now. Don't even think about it.
There is a tag team set from the 1990 Hasbro tag team series called For Demolition, and I never was able to buy it when I was a kid. Because it was always a case of, oh, we'll get it next time, it's gone. But I managed to get a hold of them on eBay, and those are actually two of my most cherished figures, because they were part of when I was a kid, and it's Crush and Smash, and they look cool. And, it's pretty awesome. Those were made by Hasbro. The license has changed many years. They never had McFarlane do their toys, so it was quite interesting seeing the Star Trek line as well. At this convention, they had their prototypes of the William Shatner and Patrick Stewart figures, and the amount of detail that they put into it is amazing.
The Captain Kirk is astonishing.
Yeah.
Like, I am buying it. They have my money.
And it's not that expensive, is it?
No.
Is it, what, $20?
Yes. The 7-inch is 20, Memor SP is $19.99, because we actually had Todd McFarlane, the CEO, creator of McFarlane Toys, on stage telling us about this. He wants to put the value as well in that $20 figure. He said, if you're buying this for $20, you are getting at least $20 worth of value for it. And that's the time they put into the facial scans, because they were talking about the process of, he's still William Shatner now, you're not getting 60s Captain Kirk.
What are you talking about?
So they have these 3D scanners that they use on all current things. They also talked a little bit about Discovery and what they were allowed to do there. But with William Shatner especially, they do a lot of work looking at a lot of reference photos, trying to get that. There are a lot of publicity photos out there, which they base a lot of their design on, but they put a lot of work into that, and they showed us the raw sculpt, like the raw 3D rendering of what they're going to create the casts for when they make the figures. And to be honest, they look better than the figures themselves. And Evan, can't remember his last name, but Evan, one of the brand managers for the Star Trek brand of McFarlane Toy, actually said that he wishes he could just release these figures in the grayscale scans that they have, just because they look absolute perfection in there without the maybe slight discoloration that would annoy a few people.
Our first day they're on sale, are you getting a Captain Picard, James?
I think I might.
Okay.
They made a very damn good case. They also talked about some upcoming ones, one of them being the Trouble with Tribbles episode. They're going to make a Captain Kirk based on that. But they realise that action figure buyers come in two cases. Those that keep them in the cases, those that take them out and play with them and pose them. They're making lists for both their card in the box. Captain Kirk is going to be in his green shirt, but the box is then going to be filled with Tribbles. So inside the box, he's going to look like he did in the episode. However, those that want to take him out of the package, he's going to have 16 points of articulation, including something called the T-crotch, which is something they like referring to in the panel, which just means the legs can move backwards and forwards. And so when you take out the packaging, it's still going to be fully posable for how you want to pose it there. And that was very cool to hear, because they're big fans as well. Evan and Jeremy, again, I can't remember the last things off the top of my head, but they are super passionate. Evan walked down the aisle at his wedding to the Deep Space 19. He dropped that little bombshell.
I, you know, don't buy a lot of new Trek toys, but I've been really down with the Diamond Select figures that have come out the last while, especially for me, the original series ones, the Kirk and Khan, Spock with the Horta. And actually, this weekend, I got the Wrath of Khan, where he has his chair. I really like these finely detailed figures, and so when I saw photos, because wasn't able to make that panel, but when I saw photos of the Kirk, I mean, I fell in love.
Where did you get the Wrath of Khan version of Khan?
The One Track Mind panel that Jordan Hoffman put on. He had two of them this year where we voted for the best holodeck episodes and then the best non-Trek Patrick Stewart roles.
Were you there, Scott, for any of those?
I was there for both.
Oh, wow. What did you pick up?
I have a Next Generation Captain's onesie, which I will be wearing on the flight home. That'll get me in first class with Patrick Stewart, thank you. And I picked up some tumbler glasses as well, with Next Generation and original series themes of props and uniform.
What were your picks for, say, the Patrick Stewart roles, non-Trek related, as well as the holodeck episode?
Well, I picked I picked American Dad, I believe, for Patrick Stewart, which got shot down quite quickly by Jordan Hoffman, which hurt me to know him. Apparently comedy isn't a thing that Patrick Stewart can do. And what did I pick for holodeck episodes?
Was it Elementary Dear Data? Or was that one snatched from your clutches?
It wasn't that one.
It was just full of data.
Yes, right.
Yeah, what holodeck episode did you go with,
Kylie? Well, somebody snatched Our Man Bashir from me.
Right.
So I actually went with, instead of kind of a silly episode, I think Deep Space Nine is really the only series that actually got the holodeck right, where they made it like a serious thing. So I went with It's Only a Paper Moon, which is where Nog is essentially living in the holodeck the holosuite to deal with his PTSD, which I thought was a strong one. People like that one. I was kind of surprised that people actually ranked it as high as they did, because I just think it's a bit of a heavier episode. Cam, what did you go with?
I did a point and swing for the episode The Practical Joker from the animated series, which is arguably the first time we see a holodeck in Star Trek. I struck out. But you know what? Yeah, the way the panels work is everyone goes up to a mic, pitches, you know, an episode to nominate, or a moment or whatever, a movie to nominate for the list. And then as we work down the panel, we then winnow it down. And each person who goes up to the mic and contributes gets its free swag. So that's a big part of the appeal of that panel.
We talked about Scott's swag. What did you get from the Patrick Stewart as well as the holodeck?
Well, I got my Khan figure, my Diamond Select.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And then I got a notepad with like Kirk and the Gorn on it, which I'll use for notes for this very podcast.
Very awesome. I grabbed one of those big Star Trek Next Generation onesies. I got the red uniform with the red, with the four pits, so I'm a captain apparently. And I also grabbed a Star Trek The Next Generation scarf, so it's kind of the gold style, and I've got a big old comm badge at the very bottom. Right. Hey, guys, did anybody pick up, like, some, merchandise or something that they really loved, like their favorite purchase so far this weekend? Scott, anything jump to mind to you?
I'm not a big merch guy. I generally just pick up a couple of T-shirts most years, so no, not really. I'm just going home for the stuff I want.
Okay, what about you, Cam?
This year, again, I was going around getting original series guest stars, autographs. So, I went and got one from Tanya Lalani George, who played the dancer in Wolf in the Fold.
And one of your favorite episodes.
One of my favorites. One of yours favorites, too. You know, and
dear listeners, we both hate that episode.
It's a weird one. And it was interesting to meet her because she, like, literally did not believe I'd seen that episode.
Really?
She was just like, you haven't seen this. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, do you know the name of the episode I was in? I said, yeah, we'll open the poll. She's like, I don't understand. You're really young. And I had to, like, convince her that I had watched this show.
Maybe she doesn't know Netflix or...
Yeah, I know. But, yeah, and I also met Jack Donner, who played Tal, the Romulan, from the Enterprise incident. So, you know, I did a few of those, and to me, those are always really, really cool.
Yeah. I got to pick up a Star Trek Discovery comm badge, or I guess the Delta. I have to say, Scott, you bought one as well. It is beautifully made. It was only $20. It is high quality. It looks exactly like we've seen the publicity stills. It fits on to you with, like, these really strong magnets. I'm in love with this thing. I love just holding it in my hand and, like, pairing it with me. What do you make of the comm badge, Scott?
Well, I mean, yeah, all credit to QMX, who designed it, well, not designed it, but put it out, and put it out so fast as well. I mean, it's missing one little bit, which is sort of the pits, if
right.
you will.
Yeah.
But they said they're going to bring that out in the sort of next line. And there was only one vendor's stall in the whole of the convention that was actually selling these, so it was sort of a sought-after product, actually, which we stumbled across on the first day.
Yeah, in the commands insignia, it's all gone at this point. So, yeah, you can still get, like, well, as of the last day, you could still grab sciences, operations, or medical, but I think everybody was scrambling to get those command deltas.
Right. James, what was your best purchase?
I got the TNG Delta. Like I said earlier in the episode, Next Generation is my series, 30th anniversary, and I picked up the 50th anniversary one last year, and I was so impressed with the quality there. It was only when I got home I realized that they make the Next Generation one, of course shipping to the UK,
yeah,
a big cost, so I thought the cheaper option is to buy an expensive flight to America. But as soon as I walked in, I saw it. Again, the prices, if you ever come to these cons, look around, prices vary quite substantially. There's a $10 difference from this at the stall that I bought it from, which was $15,
yeah, yeah.
And $25 at other stalls as well.
You can find some bargains here for sure.
Definitely.
Just as we wrap up, Cam,
there was one thing I want to just mention,
okay,
maybe briefly. We on the show reviewed the film Adam Nimoy's For the Love of Spock.
Yeah.
And at the con, we saw the debut of Julie Nimoy, his daughter, a new documentary, Remembering Leonard. And I thought, you know, it's a short documentary, it's maybe an hour, maybe a little less.
Yeah.
I don't quite know how they're going to release it, maybe whether it goes to Netflix or something.
Some streaming service.
But I was curious, you know, like, how many of you were here to see it? Tyler, you were.
I saw it. Cam saw it. James.
I don't know.
Scott,
I was passing through the room heading off to the secondary stage at that point, but I did catch the sort of brief trailer, I think it was some sort of sizzle field.
Right.
For me, I say the highlight of it was one particular moment where Julie Nimoy, she actually revealed, like, these bloopers from when her father, Leonard Nimoy, is directing her in these old Chevrolet commercials for minivans, and she, like, I don't think she's going to call herself in any sort of thespian, but I thought it was, like, the most revealing moment here. And, like, she was cracking up. He was having a great time with his daughter. I think we needed more moments like that throughout. And I think we saw a lot of that with the Adam Nimoy documentary from last year. It really was a journey about him and his father's relationship. I didn't quite get that with Julie Nimoy. It is mostly about her trying to raise awareness about, is it COPD? I think that's what Leonard Nimoy eventually succumbed to with regards to chronic smoking throughout his younger years and how that created pulmonary issues for him as well.
Cam, what did you make of the doc? Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of issues with it in that, yeah, it definitely wants to tackle, you know, COPD, which I think is a worthy, you know, aim for it to do. But it kind of did it a lot at multiple points. It kind of kept returning to the same well. There was a lot of stuff about Leonard's, you know, biography that is just covered better in For the Love of Spock because they had more time.
Right.
That's like, you know, an hour and a half, 100 minutes, something like that. This is less than an hour. But what I thought this documentary did, at least better than anything I've seen, was really giving us a better insight into sort of Leonard Nimoy, the family man. And I thought...
Yeah,
that's where I actually found this documentary really moving, was when we actually spent time with his actually close family members, just talking about him as a grandfather or a father, and seeing footage of him, you know, having his birthday party at the house, that sort of intimate access is something that there wasn't a lot of in For the Love of Spock, but I felt like this one did it quite well. I wish maybe they'd done more of that. So this is not anywhere near as strong a documentary, I don't think, as For the Love of Spock, but I thought it had it offered at least a different perspective.
So guys, why don't we just do a very quick lightning round? If there's just any little bits or pieces you can say, we'll do it in like less than 10, 20 seconds, because the four of us, plus a bunch of our other friends, we spent a week in Vegas so far. So much happened. I think we're only scratching the surface, but we don't have time. Cam, just any little bits or pieces that you want to get out there, or should we jump over to James?
Yeah, I thought Ron Jones's Jazz Night Orchestra concert was a lot of fun. Seeing the stars, Jimmy Darin, Chase Masterson, Max Groeneschick, who can really sing.
Yeah. I was so impressed with Max Groeneschick and his singing ability. We've seen him in the Rat Pack, but this, it is such a showcase for him. I was floored.
I would have loved if he'd done more. He only did two songs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in the previous handful of cons, like three cons, they've done an orchestral versions of the famous scores. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of a return to them doing, you know, Star Trek stars on Broadway type music. And it was fun.
Yeah, it had a rocky start, though. We'll ignore that. There was, let's say, many a libation may have been consumed.
Yes, not all the Star Trek stars were on good behavior. I wouldn't say that. What were some of the other ones people just want to mention?
Proudest moments. Star Trek karaoke, they do it two nights in a row on the Thursday and the Friday. Everybody should go. Always a lot of fun. Proudest moment for me is that I started a giant conga line for one of our friends, Stefan Estanilo, another guest who's going to be on one of our future episodes as well. I was so proud of that. I also got to do the VR display that they had going for, if you ever want to explore the bridge of the USS Eegees, I'm totally promoting that. What a cool thing to just check out if you ever wanted to pretend that you were actually on the bridge of the starship. Scott, any little bits or highlights that you want to highlight?
The only thing left for me was, and we sort of touched on it before with Adam Nimoy, is the DS9, the documentary coming out soon. They did quite a few panels for that. There was the Confessionals and the CBS All Access, which we all took part in at one stage or another.
Just for anybody who doesn't know, essentially they're still filming the documentary for What We Left Behind, the DS9 doc, and just fans could go sit in a chair, they'll film you, record you, and we can express what we love, and they really were pushing people to say what you hate about Deep Space Nine as well. But Scott, you did very well with that.
I certainly got a few laughs out of the crowd, which probably means I won't actually make the documentary. But yeah, hey ho.
Yeah, one of us may be famous, you know, this time next year.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. James?
One of my highlights wasn't anything to do with the con per se. The Rio put on a presentation of Galaxy Quest poolside
one
night, and I bought the Blu-ray of Galaxy Quest after hunting it down in the UK, because it was printed in the UK for some reason. And I'd been meaning to watch it for so long, and seeing that, you heard me, I was like, I don't care what we're doing, I'm going to go see Galaxy Quest. You don't have to go, I'm going. And just sitting by the pool, watching it, I was quoting along to it. I love that movie. That was a definite, absolute highlight. It's one of those surreal moments. Yeah. I think me and Scott talked about how it's one of those, you know, we have a pretty great life. You know? It was genuinely awesome.
It kept the con spirit going in a fun way, and I kind of hope the Rio does something like that next year. I think it was a good idea.
And it was free as
That was another thing. Yeah. And, you know, go to our archives. You can find our Galaxy Quest episode, actually, and I'll also post the link to it in the show notes.
By the sons of Warven, and you shall be avenged.
Tyler, we should just mention at the end that we had a lot of fun on our panel. We talked acting beyond Star Trek. You can find a version of that. It was just the last episode, I believe, released, where we kind of break down hidden gems in the actors' filmographies. We had a lot of fun, and I'd like to thank everyone who came out.
And I think, like, we want to keep pitching these panels. Like, you and I have fun when we do this, and I think even if we're going to smaller conventions, I don't know if creation wants us back, but we'll at least pitch some at these smaller conventions,
we'll
too.
We'll force our way in somehow.
Yeah.
Okay, so on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Tyler, we're also on Facebook.
Yeah, go to facebook.com/subspacepod, or just search for us in your Facebook search bar at Subspace Transmissions. You guys are posting all this exclusive content there, and you need to follow us or like us. videos, commentary episodes, plus we'll keep you up to date on kind of the latest news. It's worth it, and we're not flooding your feed.
Hey, I just wanted to let everyone know that next week we are going to be tackling Star Trek's Most Iconic Moments, Part 3. We've done this a couple times in the past. Always have a lot of fun doing that, but we have way more to go. We also have a special guest tuning in, and that was also done in Las Vegas. It'll be a fun one.
So you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Vegas is over for another year, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in never give up, never surrender.
And Scott?
I'm at Siberius Hardy, that's H-A-R-D-Y. Why do I have to go home?
James?
I am at Diet Pizza, as in diet and pizza.
Okay, so until next time, and I guess next year, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.